You're listening to the Common Descent Podcast.
Hello, James.
Hello there.
Hello, Amanda.
Hello.
Hello, Kurt.
Hi.
Hi, Will.
Hi, David.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Common Descent Podcast. This is Spotlight 2024, our special series throughout the year where we are sitting down to chat science communication with a bunch of our fellow paleontology science communicators. This episode, we are joined by the illustrious hosts of Paleo After Dark. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into and have you all introduce yourselves. So let's start with James. Please introduce who you are for our listeners.
Hi, I'm James Lambsdale, one of the hosts, obviously, of Paleo After Dark, and also a faculty member at West Virginia University.
Great. Amanda?
I'm Amanda Falk. I am a faculty member at a small liberal arts college that probably most people never hear of, so that's okay. And I study birds.
I'm Curtis Congreve, and I am a faculty member over at North Carolina State University, and I study trilobites and brachiopods. I guess if Amanda added something, now we got to keep going. James, no one's going to know what you do. You messed up.
People could Google me very easily.
Yes, they can.
what a brag that is. Don't worry, the internet knows about me. Thank you, all three of you, so much for joining us for this discussion. We're very happy to connect with you.
Happy to be here.
Yeah.
If you would please, if any of our listeners are not already familiar with your podcast and they are inspired after this discussion to go check it out, which they totally should, what do they have to expect from Paleo After Dark? What's the vibe?
Chaos.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Chaos.
Maybe a more charitable read that I've heard before is like a reading group on papers, that especially the experience of being in a group of students looking over scientific papers and just trying to work through and grok what the heck is actually happening in those papers.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. The way that I've thought of it in sort of very, very broad terms for people who are fans of our podcast, it's like if our news section was the whole episode.
Yes.
We talk about news and we very intentionally keep it to just a few minutes so that we don't have to go into super technical detail. Paleo After Dark goes into all the detail that you could want. Well, moving on from that, I'd love to get a little more of an in-depth description. What do you all consider to be the mission or goal behind Paleo After Dark?
I mean, it's primarily, probably somewhat superfluous these days. It was to try to show scientists as people, to not just talk about science, to mix in our own interests, and to sort of show us as, you know, more than just one dimensional, like people in lab coats, and just try to draw in more of a general audience, something which I know factually we have failed at because everybody that listens to us is a grad student or was a grad student or has done science in some way.
Or somehow makes the terrible life decision to go into science later on.
That is absolutely not true. I know of some of my students and former students who have listened to this podcast for some completely indiscernible reasons.
One thing I would say that was an inspiration for when we got started was that a lot of us listened to podcasts, but when the early paleocasts were coming out and a lot of the early science podcasts, they were all very NPR style, professionally edited, very like, you know, to the point, lots of musical flair here and there, sort of shows. They weren't long form podcasts. I mean, I listened to Idle Thumbs and kind of stole all of the good ideas we had for the first few episodes of Paleo After Dark from that and just kind of ran with it. But like, just people having a conversation was something that I felt was lost. And James and I were oftentimes having these conversations over papers, and James would say, we should just record this. So we did.
That's actually very similar to the conversations that we had before starting this podcast, which was, we've been part of those discussions in the grad student offices or in the halls of science conferences that are just a bunch of nerds hanging out talking about cool stuff. Mm-hmm. But people hardly ever get to see that side of science.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's usually the more curated and to the point, you know, which is a very effective way to educate, but that is not actually how the conversations in the science halls and in the, you know, offices are actually going. Those are much more meandering and geeking out.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can, how to put this, you have a, that kind of, sterile's the wrong way for it, but very, very professional, like presentation style can sometimes keep science feeling like it's at a distance. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's this thing that you're taught or this thing that you sit and passively explore. Whereas just people having a weird conversation, somehow relating things to Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. that can make it seem more real. I don't know. That's me truly waxing philosophic on mostly just an excuse to talk to my friends that we record on the internet.
Yeah.
That's what there this is.
I think one of the things, go on, Amanda. Sorry, do you have something?
Oh, I know. I didn't have any. Okay.
This is the thing that we do a lot of because we've been doing this remote for so long now that we constantly talk over each other and try to work out. But when we started, there were maybe at most a handful of paleontology podcasts, yeah. And it was mm-hmm. a wide open field of you can do whatever, and it will be new. And we've been doing this longer than I care to think of. and that field, that sort of scene has changed. And so, to be honest, is kind of like why we were doing this or what we intended to do. We started off just recording tabletop conversations about papers, and we were picking papers that were interesting or that we sort of like wanted to read anyway. And then there comes a point where you've done it long enough where you just have to decide, are we going to keep doing it? And we realized the best way to keep talking to each other in some ways was to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And then we started getting serious about it and started picking papers to feature the paper rather than just because we were super interested in it. And now we aim for a diversity of things and we try to cover stuff beyond what you often will see, which there is a, in paleo media in general, there is a very strong vertebrate bias. It doesn't mean that we do not do vertebrates, but we will cover the things that a lot of the time might slip through the cracks. And we will also cover base theory and except, and we try to clarify this when we're talking about this, that we read the papers with whatever time we have and we talk about it. And while we technically are experts with an expertise, it does not mean we are right. And there's a lot of perspective and thought and like our own personal bias that goes into this. And that is one of the things that I think is we're always trying to tread the entertainment versus education sort of line. Mm-hmm. And we will get things wrong, and we have occasionally, I know, upset people, but we always try to be honest and open about what we do know and what is an opinion and what is basically kind of just us spitballing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think for our purposes, you know, trying to get away from just what everyone else is talking about, right? So like a lot of the time we don't go for the big flashy news story at the time, right? We go for the more the more less talked about news story, or you know, the paper that didn't get an article in, you know, the New Yorker or whatever. That's not the right paper, but it was the word that came to mind. So like, you know, that I think is really a part of what we do, is try and bring to light some of the maybe lesser known stuff that doesn't get talked about.
I appreciate that a ton.
And then sometimes we have to talk about dinosaurs.
Yeah, every once in a while we just have to. I want to circle back, James. We would still be probably texting each other if we didn't have the podcast. We're trauma bonded from grad school. That's just going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yes. But there's sadly, screen time with people
accurate
gets much less like free as you get busier and get older. Mm.
Yeah, so it's just a fun excuse to have to talk to you.
Yeah, and so we set aside 2 to 3 hours every 2 weeks where we have this time and this is what we do.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah.
This is something that has come up elsewhere in our discussions in this series, that podcasting, there seems to be a theme that podcasting is often at least partially selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've talked about that we started doing the podcast in part as an excuse to be able to stay up to date on research and keep talking to each other.
No longer in academia, and we felt all of those skills and knowledge fading as we weren't using it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like a lot of this ties into what James said, that mission of showing scientists as people, all those aspects of bringing your personal desires to it, showing that you're wrong about stuff or your personal opinions are all valuable. You know, those are all sides of a human being,
mm-hmm.
and feel like even though there are things you may have to apologize or correct for later on, are an important part of that mission.
Mm-hmm. It can lead to some very interesting realizations of things that you've held in your mind since childhood that are incorrect, such as whether horses were ever carnivorous, things like that.
I'm very glad you finally found that photograph, that image that haunted you from a textbook years ago.
It was from the Velvet Claw television documentary series.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things you sort of said that podcasting is kind of very, at its core, it's somewhat selfish. And I definitely understand that. I mean, we went out of our way to do what is essentially a personality-driven podcast, which is weird because the reason we're all talking together is because we're all the rejects that no one else wanted to talk to.
The introverted rejects at that.
And so you end up putting yourself out there and just basically expect that people want to listen to you for some reason. What we have always been very careful about doing, we feel very strongly about, is that even though it is essentially self-indulgent, this isn't about self-promotion. We do not talk about our own research. We're all active researchers. We don't talk about our own research, and we don't promote that, because I've had conversations with other scientists that do a degree of science communication, and I would say the majority of the time, even if it maybe is only a slim majority, they literally only think about it in terms of self-promotion and getting their research out there. Mm-hmm. And I understand that's very important, particularly in the sort of very pseudo-corporate world that academia has become. But we very strongly don't feel like that is what we want to do or what this is about. So.
It does make GSA occasionally a kind of nightmare, because it's the one time where we'll have someone else want to talk about our research.
What we really need to do is get all a variety of paleo podcasts together so that each one can talk about the other's research.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when your friends are talking you up or complimenting you to someone else.
We'll have to draw straws. We'll be the short straw if they get us.
it's like an icebreaker. You have to give a compliment to the other group.
Yes. Yes.
We're going to have to talk about invertebrates, it sounds like.
Yeah.
I do think that it's a really interesting point that you made, that the podcast is sort of personality driven, because that's something I think we also noticed in our podcast, that we didn't mean for it to be that.
No.
The idea was, this is science, and if you're interested in science, you'll listen to it.
And we were trying to bring like our tour guide energy. So we were trying to bring that enthusiasm and that up energy, but
what we have found is that there is a contingent of people out there in the world who seems like they will listen to stuff because they like us more than they like the topic. And that is a shocking discovery to make.
Yep.
That is not something that we intended or set out to do. I don't know if you've had a similar experience like that.
I mean, I understand that mindset, because I'm the person who likes to, when I have a bad day, I like to just sit and watch Bob Ross videos, because I'm like, do I care about painting? No. Does Bob Ross's voice make me feel better? Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand that mindset. I can't say that I have any idea if our podcast has accrued that kind of following. I have no idea.
I mean, I'm one of these people that there are certain personalities within video games media that I like their content. I put their videos on. Curtis got me into Giant Bomb when I was much younger, and I followed core contingent of them as they left and did their own thing, which is now Nextlander. And I put that on when I'm working, and it's like having people in the room. And I understand the feeling that you have this connection with people, and you're going to listen to people that you like listening to. It can be very easy to overplay how like the actual connection, because it's all generally very, it's going to be by the nature of media very, very one way. Mm-hmm. You know, the listeners are going to feel the connection, and you may not necessarily know that these people are out there. But I have had people come up to me. I had somebody approached me in Stop and Shop in yeah. New Haven and introduce themselves and say hi. I've encountered people, researchers, that say they listen to us when they're working late in the lab. I had somebody say that when a family member passed away, like yeah. we were with them while they were dealing with that. And so it's, I think by the nature of whenever you're doing something and putting it out there, be it online, on radio, on TV, whatever, there are people who are going to form a connection with you. And this is something that then it's important to be aware of, which you're obviously aware of, because then you start exerting a degree of influence and power over people, and that is uncomfortable and can be dangerous. And so there's a lot of responsibility yeah. that comes with this, even though you don't realize that's what you're actually taking on when you decide to do this.
I like how we're basically coming to the YouTube discussion of parasocial relationships about yes. 6 years late.
Mm-hmm. That's everything we've ever done.
No, we've had people who have asked like for advice on their school career of like, mm-hmm. you know, should they go in for a master's degree or
yeah. or people who have said, I decided to yeah. because mm-hmm. of listening. And it really does drive home that responsibility
yes.
that you were talking mm-hmm. about, that it is in portraying ourselves as people. Keep being aware of the way that other people connect to people.
Yes.
It yeah. makes it more personal and all the things that come along with that.
And every social discussion like this is effectively a performance. Even if you are trying to keep your performance honest, it's still performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you run into this bizarre situation where there is a version of me that exists on the internet. There's a version of Amanda. There's a version of James that exists on the internet that is not any of us, but it is a version that exists because of, I thought it would be funny to edit it this way. Yes. I take a conversation mm-hmm. and I splice things together and I try and make it sound like I'm not doing that, but I definitely do that because sometimes it's funnier if I cut this little bit out and we get to the punchline more. Like, mm-hmm. and that creates a version that never actually existed, but it's a version of a person in the world yeah. now.
And that's building on the fact that in order to do this, like it takes, just speaking for myself, a great deal of energy to sit down and do this, because even though I'm just talking to two of my friends, you are still having to marshal thoughts and put on some sort of a production. My brother has listened and said, oh, it's interesting, you're the only one with a persona. I'm just like, oh, it's just because you don't know the other two as well. And so it's, yes. it's not like that I am not me on when I'm recording this, but as somebody that got into Dungeons and Dragons and role playing, and for our Christmas episode, our holiday episodes, we'll do some role playing production. It's just taking a part of me and making it bigger. And there are things that sometimes there are things, the way I am on the podcast, which is somewhat overly dismissive sometimes, or I lean heavily into the bit and it's really good until people don't realize it's a bit, that I wouldn't necessarily want to be that day to day. And then it does lead to some interesting scenarios where people meet you and think they can be a certain way with yeah. you. And it's like, no, this isn't actually how I am. Like,
yes.
It's a really interesting point, and I'd love to dig a little deeper into that question of how do we, because education is, oftentimes science communication is a performance, whether mm-hmm. you're in front of a classroom or you're writing, you know, it is often going to be curated to some degree. You're talking to a group of people. So how do you go about striking a balance between being authentic and being not fake, especially when you're trying to deliver reliable information and trying to present yourselves as human beings and not just, you know, lab coat mannequins? while also managing to be something that is polished enough that people are going to be able to listen to it, or that it is putting out the perception that you're going for.
I think, and this is the problem with having three different people on is, like, no one wants to put words in each other's mouth.
Well, I also think we're going to have three different answers.
We're 100% going to have three different answers. Yeah.
We're going to fill this episode out real quick.
Excellent.
Yeah.
The way that I kind of feel like we all have different roles to fill in that sort of aspect of things. I know that a lot of the time, you know, I sort of am the one who is maybe going through and tackling some of the concepts that are a little simpler, because I mean, that's sort of what I always feel like I'm doing.
It's only because of the things you know. You always think the things you know are simple when they're actually very complicated.
That's fair.
This is an intervention, Amanda. You're worthwhile.
Thank you to everyone for tuning in.
But, because I teach a lot of different subjects at my college, right? And so I view myself as the person who knows a lot of little different things about little things, right? And so it's like, I just literally taught this section in comparative physiology. Let me tell you how fish breathing works, right? Stuff like that. That sort of, I guess that's kind of how I view myself as the almost the jack of all vertebrate trades. And, you know, we don't usually always or even usually cover vertebrates, but we've started doing it more. that's sort of, I feel like I kind of fill a very maybe randomized role, which is fine.
you play the role of cat wrangler.
for our dear listener, my cats are fighting in the background. And I'm very sorry about that. It's practically dinner time. So
I appreciate that, because it's someone else's podcast, you added an S to that as opposed to dear listener, which dear is what listener. You do when it's our podcast.
We've got two. Well, we've got your listener and our listener.
Yeah,
exactly. There's at least two listeners involved here.
Yes.
In terms of balancing authenticity versus role in science education, I mean, I think a complication that you're always going to run into is what you said, that people will start listening just because they're interested in hearing you talk, even if that's not what you want. And to some degree, that's kind of just human nature. Like, in terms of science education, I think this is just the way that I learn anything. I think that all education is in some way storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to be able to craft a narrative that people can latch on and identify with. And you need to do it in a way that tries to reach the broadest number of people by using as many different analogies or references or whatever that will connect to a wider variety of people so they can relate it back to their life. And without being able to relate it back to something they've lived and experienced, it's just data. It's like reading a fact sheet. It doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's difficult for me to think about the podcast because I say this and people think I'm joking. I have no memory of what we've done when we finish.
Yeah.
Because I am somebody that, and I'm not the only one of us, that has lived with anxiety for most of my life. And so whenever I go up and give a talk or whenever I am presenting in front of a class, I am running off adrenaline. And it does mean that I'm not consciously making decisions. I go off, I run off vibes almost entirely. I only have active thoughts, like verbal thought brain, when I'm actively thinking or doing research. The rest of the time, it's just impulse and like reaction to whatever that is. And so it means it's very difficult to present something deliberately. Basically, you either like what I'm doing or you really hate me. There's no middle ground. And so basically, it's just kind of like you're just going with it. And this is why I think I am often the disruptive one that will throw us on complete tangents, because this is whatever has entered my brain and this is where we're going now. But the one thing I do when I'm trying to be conscious about things is ask really basic, simple questions to facilitate getting a straight answer out of Kurt or Amanda, because we can talk about the details to the extent where you can get lost. And so sometimes I'll try to bring us back to basics.
Look, anytime Amanda and James start talking about birds, they basically go off in their own universe and start using terms that no one who isn't a birder understands. And so, like, we kind of all need to keep each other in check.
Well, and that, of course, ties into another one of the challenges, especially with the kind of discussions that you all end up having, which are these deep dives into these papers, is the challenge of discussing the technical aspects of science while still maintaining accessibility for the people who are listening to it.
And sometimes I'll be the first person to say that I don't think we always do that especially well.
Not at all.
No.
Same.
Yeah.
First of all, my parents listen to this podcast, right? They listen to our podcast, which is horrifying in and of itself.
Agreed.
But, you know, every once in a while, Dad will actually call me, right? He'll be like listening to our podcast in the car or something while they're driving up to the UP. I don't know. And he'll be like, what do you mean by X? And I'm like, oh, we never explained what that actually means. And so I think like if we had like if I had one particular major goal for myself as part of this podcast, it is to try and get back to doing exactly what James does, is trying to ask those questions and like stop and do more definitions, more, you know, make sure that when we do start getting into that deep dives or those tangents that we stop and we go, hang on, wait, we got to define this. And I know I'm not always great at that, but I think if there is one thing that I want to work on, it's that, because that is part of what we should be doing. It's one of our goals.
Yeah. But as Curtis said, like I say I do this, but I also will explain things and get lost in trains of thought. So we all are keeping each other in check and are all trying to catch it.
We are all keeping each other in check on this. We all stop the other person to try and get a definition, but it's all just what we perceive, and some things just go out the wayside because we all think it's simple and we don't realize that it's not. Yeah. I think the bigger issue that we end up having is that sometimes you end up talking about the same method multiple times because there's many different papers that deal with the same method. So you kind of need to start coming up with a shorthand that explains for people who this is your first episode, but isn't so long that you get people who have listened for, you know, 270 episodes that are now really bored about you explaining what multivariate statistics is again.
Maybe we need a wiki.
Right?
Don't give the internet ideas.
Just be full of your personal information.
Oh, God, no.
No, what ChatGPT thinks our personal information is.
It is. It can be very challenging to, you know, you mentioned, I think James said earlier, you don't want to think about how long you've been doing the podcast, but you've been doing the podcast for, I don't have this information right in front of me.
I do.
How long have you been doing the podcast?
No, Curtis, it's almost 11 years.
We're going on our 11th year.
Yeah.
Going on 11. And it sounds like going on, what, 300 episodes?
Mm-hmm. More, technically more. We combined some things together here and there. But yeah, 277 is the most recent one that's going to come out, at least at the time of this recording.
It becomes a challenge to appeal to both older listeners and hopefully new listeners in the same with the same communication.
Yes.
I have no idea if we're successful on that.
No, I mean, we went on Spotify, and at one point I was tracking the metrics, and the average age of listener is not going up at the same rate that our average age is. So, which means that we are somehow attracting newer people. But also, I did at GSA this year meet somebody who said that they started their masters because they listened to us when they're in school, and I felt my bones just turned to dust.
Yeah.
Well, this brings up actually another topic that I think is really interesting. You know, whenever we're talking about science communication, there is the question of how do you know that you're effectively getting your information across? How do you know you're reaching the people you're talking to? And when it's like a lecture or a museum tour or something, the answer is, to some extent, you can see it.
Yeah.
There they are in front of you. How do you all feel about assessing your audience impact with the invisible audience that is inherent to the podcast experience?
I mean, when we started this, I'm pretty sure, James, you can quote me that I said, even if we have no one listening to it, we're still going to do it.
Yep. I remember when we did our summer book reading and we were live streaming videos and there were two Russians listening that were just commenting in Russian. Why are they doing this? Who are these people? And those are the only people that were on the call with us. So.
That's engagement.
I had forgotten that we live streamed that. Wow. Oh, yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of feel the same way about that as I do about like my teaching, right? I don't care if you walk away from this not feeling like you've learned anything, because something we've said is going to stick with you in one way or another, right?
Yeah.
And even if that has nothing to do with paleontology, even if it's about, you know, my cats or the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald or something, you know, like pie, I don't know, if something that Dragon Ball Z, even if something that we have said sparks your interest in some aspect of the world around you,
yeah,
then I feel like we have done something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also, as we've sort of as touched on a couple of times, the self-indulgency of all this. There comes a point with the way the internet works that some of these episodes are going to be around for as long as these file formats are supported.
Yes.
And so I think too much about history and legacy and what is the mark of trying to work out what is going on with people at different points in history. And the more of this kind of stuff that is out there, the more somebody in the future might run across it as a random slice of what people were doing at that time. And this is what these weird people were talking about and thinking about, you know, during this year, this month. And I think that is interesting and worthwhile in its own right, because there is a massive slant to what gets recorded or written down, and only certain types of people get that. And to be quite honest, we are enough of those certain types of people. We're not super diverse. I believe Amanda maybe is the first woman paleo podcaster.
Yeah, it might be.
But aside from that, I mean, we are the demographic that people might think of when you think about paleontologists. And so it's limited what we can do in terms of that. But it is interesting to have more ordinary people talking about stuff, and that being recorded for better or worse on the internet for probably beyond our lifespans.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't necessarily have as grandiose visions of this as being the cave drawings of our podcast. I mean,
I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it's important, but interesting.
It's about as relevant as there was a cool deer over there one time. I get it. But I mean, we literally started this before it became a cliche that everyone said that their conversation should be recorded. So I just do want that actually recorded if we're thinking about history, because now that is the going podcast cliche.
Yeah, we were the white dudes that made every other white dude have a podcast.
That's why we did it.
Yep. That's some hipster stuff right there. But, you know, I don't know. I don't particularly think of legacy. I see what the numbers are coming in. Like, they're stable. People listen. In terms of any sort of engagement outside of, again, coming across people who you meet at meetings or just come across in the wild, like, there's no really good ways for engagement these days. Social media is dead. there's the podcast website, which occasionally gets comments. That those are greatly appreciated. We have a Patreon and some patrons that we really appreciate, and they do talk to us that way. But like, there's not a ton of opportunities for audience engagement in this kind of field. You just are basically old man yelling at clouds. You're just throwing something out into the aether and hoping that something sticks.
That's something I always try to keep in mind, because we have a number of fairly engaged and vocal listeners, but I always try to keep in mind that I appreciate it, but I also want to remember that those are the ones who want to talk to us. Mm-hmm. I don't hear from the ones who go, when I say certain things or make a certain joke. I don't hear from those. They don't want to take the time to talk to us. Mm-hmm. And so I try to keep that in mind of like, I love the support we get, but these are the ones who like us that we're hearing from.
Right.
This is not our entire audience.
The direct feedback you tend to get tends to come from the small percentage that either has really lovely things to say or truly deletable things to say.
Yeah.
Five stars, one stars. Those are the only reviews.
Yes.
Yep.
I remember at one point we did get somebody started listening from the start. Like 9 years into us doing this. And they left some comments going like, I hope they don't keep going on like this. This is a bit much. And we were just sort of there going like, well, go with God. Like, there comes a point where this is what we do. And I will happily listen to feedback about like, oh, you made this joke and that was harmful or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, I don't like the format, this is what we do now. And there are other people out there that will do the thing that you like. And we aren't capable of drastically changing what we do. I don't even like the title. The title is a pure legacy of when we were talking to Dave Marshall about being affiliated with PaleoCast.
Mm-hmm. And
we're stuck with it. You cannot change it now.
Because James knew Dave and Dave was looking for some additional content. And so we were like, what about something after dark? And so we tried that. And then it didn't get obviously a part of PaleoCast, but then Dave encouraged us to just put it on the internet. So we did. And now we're stuck with it. That's where we're at.
we record usually around 3 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon. There is nothing after dark usually about our podcast.
Well, you're getting older,
right?
Exactly. Oh, no. From the beginning, sometimes at 11 a.m.
When we were drinking, when we were actively drinking while doing it, those were
dinner times.
Amanda.
No, some of those were 11.
Some of those we started at 11. Those were you're in your mid-20s days where you have had four beers before it's 1 p.m.
That was back in 2014. Yeah.
That was when the band would buy some whiskey and down the entire bottle during a session. That was that was James's days of, we're going to try this Kahlua. It doesn't have any actual milk in it. We're good.
Oh, I've just remembered the Kahlua and orange liqueur mixture that curdled horribly.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to ask about the after dark portion of the title of Paleo After Dark, which implies a more mature vibe of the discussion.
I mean, mostly it's because I can't, like, this is, I think, the longest I've ever gone on a recording without dropping an F-bomb.
Well, and that's something that I do want to actually talk about, not the F-bomb specifically, but we try to keep it clean on our podcast. But that is actually a point of distinction between not just these two podcasts, but these two. We made an intentional choice early on in Common Descent to not put in mature content, leave out mature jokes, no mature language for accessibility reasons.
Yeah.
We didn't want it to be a situation where somebody feels like they can't share it with someone else, like with a kid or a student.
Yeah, I was going to say classrooms were a big part of our decision making was we wanted it to fit in. You could play it out loud in a classroom, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I have a story about that.
not in that way.
Not in that way.
But given the conversation about showing scientists as people and being relatable, I infer that the reason that you've chosen to allow that kind of authenticity to your discussion is very, very much for the same reason, that reason of accessibility or engagement, even though it's a different philosophy on how to achieve that.
Yeah. I think it also kind of comes back to, again, what I was listening to, what James was listening to at the time, podcasts that were just conversational and were not necessarily self-censoring in the way that, I mean, clearly there's always editing, that is always to some degree an illusion. You're going to cut some things out, but gave the appearance of a more off the cuff, more conversational tone without the need to be more buttoned up and presentational. And so we were very much looking for that kind of presentational style. Mm-hmm. And so we were going to attack things the way we would normally just converse with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we didn't have any illusions that we would be able to filter ourselves to that degree for those long sessions, especially when we started off and unfortunately saddled our podcast to drink culture, which I have opinions about that now, particularly in the sciences and particularly at conferences and things like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't going to be something that we would be able to keep out, essentially. And one of the things that I've realized is that we're essentially a bunch of varying degrees of neurodivergent people being ourselves to each other. And like one of the things that I realized, I started my faculty job and it suddenly struck me a couple of years in, I was the only person to curse at faculty meetings. I did not even realize. And it didn't even occur to me that other people didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not something, it's we don't do it because it's cool. We don't do it because we think it, you know, elevates the podcast to a more mature audience. It's dragging everything down to our common denominator, which is perhaps the purpose, the point of what we're theoretically trying to do anyway. So,
yeah. And also, there is a degree of this is what it is really like, mm-hmm. right? Like, So I take students, I do research in the lab with undergraduate students. I take undergraduate students researching in the field, right? At one point, a hunk of rock, roughly my size, fell off of a road cut and hit me in the shin.
Yeah.
And I did not sit there and go, shucky darn.
Yeah, exactly.
The words that came out of my mouth would have made a hardened Navy sailor proud, right? Like, that is kind of it to an extent for some folks, part of the field, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to shy away from that. And it's, and as James said, like, you know, we are three different flavors of neurodivergence. Mm-hmm. And part of that for me, at least, is I have a very hard time filtering.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we did have to do that, it would be even more of a stretch for me than it already is.
You would be even more quiet.
Exactly. I would go from contributing some to contributing very little.
Yeah.
And it's something that I actually still deal with in the classroom too, because again, right, I teach undergraduates. There are no grad students at my college. And mm-hmm. there have been times where I'm going on something and I say, you know, I say something with various and sundry curse words in it. And the students are just like, whoa, wait a minute. Did she really say that? And I'm like, yes, I did. You're going to deal with it now.
Yep.
And not usually the F word, but you know.
Oh, I got through my entire Earth history class being unusually good. And then on the last lecture, we're talking about megafauna. I started talking about moose. And the words that should not be said in a professional setting got said in reference to moose.
Yep.
It's fitting. That. That's fitting.
I may or may not call Garrett Hardin an effing monster.
In the interest of what we were talking about before of being, mm-hmm. you know, explaining terms, if any of our young listeners out there don't know what we're talking about, ask your parents.
Yes.
Yes. I think another thing that I didn't mention earlier, I want to stress here, I don't think that either option is better or worse.
Yes.
I think it's really interesting because there's tons of podcasts, there's tons of science communication done by adults for adults mm-hmm. that has no problem including mature content, because that's kind of the point. That's part of the point here is, yeah, we're adults talking to adults and this is how we relate to each other.
Well, and mm-hmm. we've had, and I don't want to say backfire because that's too dramatic, but we've had our lack of cursing kind of come back around on us when we've met people and they've had moments of like, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse while I'm talking to you two. They don't know, do we just not curse or do we not curse on the podcast?
So, there is something kind of a weird correlation. I don't want to go too far with this, but like the particularly people who are very sensorial for language are often deeply authoritarianly minded. So that might end up kind of like feeling it out that way. I think another reason why we just didn't want to do this is we never really wanted this to be something that was going to be aimed towards the grade school level. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. We were not thinking about something that we wanted to be playing in a classroom because that just was never our vibe or our interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the main, as you say, like either option is a good option. I think the main trick comes down to if you do have things that you maybe wouldn't want, you know, 13-year-olds or younger to hear, you need to be careful about presentation and branding because people will see dinosaurs and think it's for kids.
That too.
That's a really good point.
And we don't talk a lot about dinosaurs, and we make a big joke about it when we do because we know that dinosaurs are going to bring in kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's the one good thing about our rather beige title is that it should hopefully be very clear. And so when people know what the podcast name is, I think they instinctively have an idea of what it might be. When I talk rather generally about the podcast, which I've occasionally had to do with things at work, because I don't necessarily want... for a long time, we didn't even indicate where we were because we felt that it was an inherently unprofessional thing that we were doing. And I've just come to accept it, and Curtis has to as well. Like, we'll happily say where we work, but I don't necessarily want the university being associated with it or feeling it has any kind of stake in it. Because we are fiercely defensive about editorial independence.
Yep.
And B, I don't want their legal team getting remotely involved. And so I've been, so when people have heard about the podcast, quote unquote, they've gone, oh, could you include this in your grants? I'm like, no. It's not that kind of thing.
Yeah. Never write about it in terms of like academic annual reports. Never send it up in terms of outreach or anything. Oh, you put it as outreach on the academic annual report?
Yes, I do. That.
Woo! Okay.
I mean, for basically until I had tenure, right? Because I'm at a private school. I lived in fear of people discovering that I did this.
Yeah.
Not for any real reason. The people I work with are fantastic, right? I love my colleagues. It's just like one of those things where like I was just deeply worried about, you know, someone thinking, oh, well, we don't want this kind of person here. And I remember this is the story that I said I have a story about that. My very first year here, we have a 3-week January term, and I used to teach it every year. I would teach a first year course. And like, I don't know, it was like the fourth or third to last day of class. And I walk in and I am a first year female teacher in the sciences. I'm teaching a class that covers everything from the origin of the universe through tomorrow, right? So I had literally 13 boys in the class and that was it. All right. So young female professor, nothing but boys. And I walk in one day and they're all clustered around one student's computer. And they all turn to look at me. They go, hey, Dr. Falk, what's this? And they hit play and the podcast theme starts playing. And I just went, oh, no. And fortunately, they all thought it was hysterical. Right. But like, I was also a visiting professor at that point. So I was in a really potentially unstable position. And, you know, one of the realities of academia, and this is something we have not tried to particularly, I think, hide on the podcast, is that at times and in certain places, it is inherently unstable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is one reason why now I'm a little bit more relaxed. Like I have a student who is like, I listen to the podcast and I'm just like, why? you know, but they really like it. So cool. Great. I'm happy they're enjoying it. But like 8 years ago, that would have sent me in an absolute panic.
Yeah.
And that's why old habits just die hard for me. So that's why I'm just sitting here going, I'm from an undisclosed location, right? Mm-hmm, like, I'm tenured now. Logically, I know they can't really get rid of me, but still, you know, it's one of those things where we've made some choices and I don't regret those choices. I think what we're doing is good and meaningful in some ways, at least to me. Like, I feel like I'm happy doing this because these are two of my best friends here. But I think that, you know, there was at times an aspect where I was just like, is this going to get me fired someday?
Yeah. I mean, that was more or less the advice that was given to all of us, that this would get us fired. Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting.
That's wild to think about.
Yes.
Don't start a paleo podcast. It'll be bad for your career.
Yeah.
To think about that now, you know, 11 years later.
I mean, when we're looking at academia as it stands, like there are, yes, there is freedom within academia to say things, but you come across certain elements and you will find those boundaries where if you are publicly saying something that is against the policy or the, you know, the desires of the people who are in charge of the university or the governing bodies who are in charge of the university, you could end up in some seriously hot water.
Yeah. And I mean, this is something that my university is going through some things right now. And this is something that actively they have been rewriting our rules for tenure and things like that. And this matters more and more. The one thing that I actively think about now, try to do, is as a tenured person and a white cis male, I definitely get more leeway than others would in, you know, of any other demographic, basically. And so I will be vocally critical sometimes, mainly because it doesn't matter. Like, they're not listening and it's going into the ether. But you said the wrong thing and it could come down on you hard, you know. But I think there's one of the things is it's interesting. I don't listen to our Go Back into our podcast episodes, but you will probably catch us maturing over it. And one of the things that I have actively decided in, you know, the last 5 years or so is to leverage privilege when I have it. I do that when talking about my anxiety and mental health issues and things like that, because I can talk about that and it isn't the end of my career. But other people would be marked by that and they don't feel they can talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting seeing that barometer shift, as you're saying, like the concept of a podcast, albeit a slightly edgy one, at least in its earlier years, by what was considered a podcast, quote unquote, that barometer has shifted so dramatically. And it's fascinating to look back over the history and see where our concerns over this sort of thing has shifted because of, you know, everybody else coming in and normalizing it and it now becoming a thing that is like, oh yes, no, you could, now they'll try to make you do one.
Yeah, it'd be like, you make a podcast, would you do one with no
I've had that conversation. A theme that seems to have emerged in this discussion and something that I think is important and admirable is we keep circling around this theme of honesty and openness and transparency. It's come up talking about being open and honest about the science that you're discussing, your opinions on it, your personal struggles or your personal conditions or feelings or whatnot, being honest about academia, which is something that I think has been really nice to hear in this conversation. It's really nice to hear in science communication in general, and is something that is not always the easiest thing to do for any number of reasons, but seems so core to effective communication.
Yeah.
I mean, not to potentially derail this further, but I do think we need to circle back to that discussion about performance. Like, honesty, yes, but like everything, even though I am editing it in a way to be as minimally invasive as possible, everything is edited. I listen to the whole podcast and I decide what ultimately goes out. There are plenty of very honest conversations that I'm like, that might be a little too honest. We're going to cut that.
Yes.
Or that might be something that this person doesn't actually want out, but forgot that we're just recording a conversation between friends. And so, like, there is always a balance there. Like, we are trying to, we're not lying in the sense of what our opinions are on a paper that goes out. All of that information is a reflection of our true selves. It's just always, to some degree, a little bit manufactured.
And I think one of the things, particularly because we, this is something I think that's an important point that we kind of touch on a bit during the podcast whenever we're doing it, is we talk about scientific papers that are written by people. And there is a, even if the paper, unless the paper is something that is
malevolent.
Yes. Yeah. Like yeah. People should be accorded a due level of respect. And so just like opening up on a paper for no, just, you know, just for clicks or just to, you know, there always needs to be some kind of measure to it. Otherwise, you are just being mean. You are just mm-hmm. victimizing people that have done their science and put it out there. And that's not good. One of the things that you sort of learn as a student is that you think that critiquing a paper when you first start is finding every single flaw. But the reason you start with that is because that's the easiest thing to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And really seeing what the strengths of the paper are and where people are going with it and what you yourself would build off of it, that's interesting. And so it's important to remember that there are people behind these papers. But at the same time as well, you should never assume motivation or intent.
No.
You can never tell what the history of something is or why something is the way it is. And so we regularly will end up saying something and being, of course, this is just what, you know, it could be, because it's human nature to be very definitive and then later on walk that back. But I think that's something in terms of like, yes, it's important to be honest, but you don't want to be being a jerk is just, there's no, I can't, I now got the phrase, there's no honor in that in my head, which sounds incredibly Klingon and I don't like it, but that's sort of what it comes down to, right? Like it's meant to be, you need to be honest, but it's more important as well to be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the really important thing.
It loses all of its constructiveness when you're just doing it in a mean light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that ties very nicely back to a point that you made very early on about the responsibility mm-hmm. of putting your voice out there, putting yourself out there. You are, when you do any sort of science communication to a larger audience, you're acting as a model.
As an authority on that.
How those conversations happen, representing that field. And yeah, if what you're modeling and representing is being inappropriate or being a jerk or being rude, that's the message you're putting out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to create the community that you put out there into the world. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Ideally, again, we want this to be an exploration of papers and highlighting interesting and new things and not just be negative reviews. Because negative mm-hmm. reviews, I mean, there's a reason that some of the earliest internet fame was all negative reviews, because yes. negative mm-hmm. reviews are fun. They're easy to read. They're fun to write. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's kind of like junk food calories. Like yeah. you can't, sustaining yourself on negativity is just not a healthy practice.
You know, be the chaotic but kind people you wish to see in the world.
Chaotic good.
Yes.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Be the chaotic good you wish to see.
We've had that conversation when we do our movie discussions that like, well, with the patrons, we will have a discussion of our personal feelings and we mm-hmm. still try not just to be grossly mean.
Mm-hmm.
But during the episode, we're very much discussing the movie, not just throwing it under the bus every chance we get, even if we both hated it.
Right. We've talked about movies where we have very strong feelings about it. And this goes back to what you said earlier about if it's got dinosaurs, people are going to come to
mm-hmm.
it. And
mm-hmm.
this is a conversation we had in some patron discussion, I think, at one point, where we made the point that if you do a discussion that is science of Jurassic World or something like that, the people who are going to be drawn to that discussion are the people who like science and the people who like Jurassic World.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And right. if you're poo-pooing that thing, right, that's the energy you're putting out there. You're putting that out to people who came here expecting something else.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. For the record, I do not regret at all destroying Jurassic World when that movie came out.
Oh, no. somewhere floating around the internet, there is 2 hours of me just screaming about how bad I thought that movie was. I'm here for it.
The worst thing about it is that we all turn into these armchair critics. And so we're regarding it as like filmography rather than even talking about the science.
Yeah, that's so true.
We split it. So we do our science discussion on the main episode for Silver Screen Science. And then for our patrons, mm-hmm. we do our true thoughts about it. So if any of our patrons would like to hear Will or myself at length yes. expressing exasperation and disappointment for Jurassic Park 3 and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And I think by Dominion, we were just out of
energy.
I still haven't seen Dominion. We still need to watch that together.
I saw it on a plane, which was, I think, the best way to do it because I was physically trapped, so I had nothing better to do with my time.
That's how I watched 65.
Yes.
Watched it on an airplane.
Me too. I watched that the same way.
Did you just constantly complain that there were 1 million years off?
Yes, I did have that.
If you want to know my one-sentence review of 65, I was distraught how everything they introduced was going to die horribly.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when we've split it sometimes. There's been times where the science conversation ends up being fairly mild because, like, there's actually very interesting conversation to have about what they showed. And then you listen to the patron discussion and we're like, oh my gosh. And we're just the pacing and that character didn't make any sense. And what was the point of this scene? And
it's a dramatic tone shift.
Yep.
I just remember walking out of Jurassic World just feeling crushing disappointment.
It set in later for me. When I walked out of the theater, I had fun my first. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I turned my brain off. And then as the franchise continued, I was like, oh, I didn't know what we were going to be leaning on from that first one. And that's where my feelings shifted.
Yeah. No, I was always crushingly. Now, granted, was it because I was living in Oklahoma? Maybe.
James, Amanda, Kurt, thank you all so much for joining us for this discussion. It has been a whole lot of fun. It has been very we've covered a whole lot of topics. I feel like we have effectively melded the tone and style of our two podcasts. Before we wrap things up, please feel free to let our listeners know where they can find you and or if there's anything that you would like to shout out. You are allowed to promote yourselves in this context if you so choose.
Is everybody looking at me because I do the sign-off?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I saw both of your eyes light up in a sinister grin. Well, if you like our exploits, you can follow us on www.paleoafterdark.com, but it's with an A after the L because we're being weird and pretentious about that. So P-A-L-A-E-O. Enjoy that. We do have a Patreon, so if you'd like to make sure that you can allow for us to continue to vent our weird fears and neuroses onto you, you can go to www.patreon.com/paleoafterdark. I think that's about it. I mean, if you go on to pretty much Spotify or really any podcast app and look for Paleo After Dark, again, putting the A after the L because we're weird pedants, you can find us. If you want to start with an episode, probably don't start with the most recent one. I don't know when this is coming out. The Christmas episodes are all D&D episodes. Those are not, that's not going to be a good place to start. But
Google Columbo meets Gary Busey.
Yes, Google Columbo meets Gary Busey, the podcast that is the most nonsensical, but is probably the best encapsulation of what we do, because we were all coming at it deeply traumatized by an event we're not going to talk about. And we all needed to record the next day. And so we just kept talking, and it's the only way we got through it. I put that one up on YouTube, and it's very funny. It's got 1,000 dislikes because Columbo and Gary Busey aren't at all in the title. There's nothing about Columbo meeting Gary Busey in the podcast whatsoever.
Fantastic. Listeners, do check out Paleo After Dark if it sounds like something that would be up your alley, which if you're listening to this, odds are it will be. Do note the After Dark in the title, just in case. Also, keep your ears out for the other episodes in this Spotlight series. We'll be releasing episodes all throughout the year. Further conversations with other Paleo podcast buddies. Once again, thank you all three so much for joining us. This has been a whole bunch of fun. I hope you've had a good time, and we hope our listeners have enjoyed it as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Common Descent Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and check our WordPress blog for pictures and links after each episode. Huge thanks to our patrons whose support helps keep this podcast running and who get access to bonus goodies on Patreon. The song you're hearing is called On the Origin of Species by Protodome, which we found at ocremix.org. Thanks again for listening. We hope you'll join us next time.